Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach on this Saturday, August 8th, 2015. And if also August 8th, 2015, where you are, August 8th, 2015.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
You know, you got to think, I'm just thinking about the fact that August 8th, 2015. No wonder the year is going by so fast.
He's very hungry. He ate 2015.
August 8, 2015. Anyway, but you can give us a call in here if August 8, 2015, where you are too, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. And we may not be here next week. It's going to probably be a recording.
Probably won't be here next week. Well, wherever we are, it'll be here. It just won't be in Temple.
Yeah, we will be... my sister and your daughter,
District of Columbia,
is defending her dissertation at Georgetown University.
Well, first, she has to present it. We're going to be there for the presentation.
Well, there's also the beginning of her oral defense is going to be in front of us, and then she's going to have to go into a private room and defend her dissertation against very well robed individuals
who all have postal diggers after their names.
Yes, PhDs
and piled higher and deeper. And then hopefully she will have a PhD after her name, and she will be the first in our lineage as far back as we've been able to research who will be
a PhD.
Dr. McClure.
Dun, dun, dun.
That'd be pretty cool. Anyway, which just goes to show that my kids are a lot smarter than I am. The let's see, what else I said. U.S. payrolls rose 215. There was something I was going to talk about that was significant.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
Payrolls is the big thing for me.
Oh, yes.
If you look at the
Martin Feldstein.
Okay, yeah. So let's hit that one first.
Martin Feldstein has done some research and come to some interesting conclusion, and said, yes, you can find statistics that indicate that the middle class in the United States has actually had real wage decline. However, if you look at the whole picture and you look at all the benefits they've gotten that they didn't have before, and you look at the fact that their tax burden has, note this, ladies and gentlemen, since 1980, declined substantially, and you start down the list and you plug it all together, you find out that the middle class since 1980 in the United States has had a real income growth after counting inflation, net type income, of 50% since 1980. In other words, if you look at what we consider to be the average middle class person, officially or unofficially, since 1980, that family is living at a standard of living that is approximately 50% higher than it was in 1980. Now,
there's another
Martin
piece
Feldstein
here.
May have a conflict of interest. He was the chairman of economic advisors for Ronald Reagan, and later on was under both Bushes was different things.
There's
too.
Another piece to add to the puzzle here, and that is that in 1980, only about 30% of couples were dual income. And it is much up there. It's more like 64-65% now. And if you think about that for a moment and realize that there's another income coming in, you realize that the actual standard of living is much higher today for your average family than it was in 1980.
And those who want to denigrate either the current president or the economy in general, who say, no, that's not true because now there's two people working and that means the average person is making less money. Folks, there were two people working in 1982. It's
right.
Just one of them wasn't getting paid.
Correct.
And now they are paying somebody else to do, in most cases, what the first person was doing. Let's use a stereotype and the average, although it might not be the average very much longer. If the woman was a, quote, housewife, end quote, in 1980 and was doing a lot of work but not getting paid by anyone other than her husband for this,
right?
Today that person is putting in probably an equivalent amount of work, getting paid for it, and then paying somebody else
a smaller amount, yes.
And net of all of that, they are making more money.
Lots more. Because individually. 50%
more after we factor in inflation and everything else than we were in 1950. In other words, this economy.
1980,
yeah. This economy and our lives within it as members of the middle class, and I am, and I presume most of you are too, members of the middle class, are in a position where over the last 35 years, we have seen a significant rise in our standard of living. I know I have.
Oh, people that doubt that. I mean, we're talking about, there are a lot of people that talk about, well, what about fixed income people? And I say, yeah, what about them? Fixed income people.
I'm trying to figure out who that is right now.
If somebody is on a pension or Social Security, and that's it. They're not. Yeah. That's not going
up. Social Security rises with inflation.
Right. So the fixed income, you can have a pension TRS.
They did raise it once.
One time. But they say they won't.
Years.
Okay. So if you're on TRS, and I've got a pretty good sampling of folks that are on fixed income.
Mm-hmm.
20 years ago, there was a possibility that they did not have air conditioning. That is not a very high possibility today. And most people in the United States, no matter what their income, it's not true. But in Texas, very true. Most people in Texas, no matter the income, have air conditioning.
And they're beginning to wish, by the way, in New England that they had air conditioning too. Because it's pretty hot up there.
So that's a big thing. Standard of living. And one of the things that we like to do is count cars. How many cars per household? Okay, what is the size of the television? You go through a list of things like that, and you'll find that the standard of living has risen.
That's good.
It's rizzed. It's when you lay out each piece of luxury that we have today that we didn't have then. The number of people with smartphones is a pretty good example of that.
In 1980, nobody had a smartphone.
And if you
in 1980, nobody had a cell phone.
Personal computers, cell phones, multiple cars. That isn't saying that they're not living in poverty, because they're still. We just have a different standard for what poverty is today than we used to, and it doesn't mean that it's not a difficult place to be, because if you go back 100 years, we had a different standard of poverty then, and then you come up to 1950, we could say, well, the people living in poverty in 1950 didn't have anywhere near the stress, and that's true, but that was still not a very fun place to be. And this is when you live in poverty today, it's still not a very fun place to be.
In the 1950s, people who live in poverty didn't have as much stress.
Well, they didn't have as much stress as people 100 years before that.
Oh.
And living in poverty.
The people in poverty.
Yeah, at any point in history, you can say, as long as it's American history, you can say that people in poverty have it great today. But if you wait 20 years and look back, you'll say, man, you wouldn't probably want to live there. If you say people in poverty live it great today, then why don't you just go be in poverty? You don't want to do that.
The average American lives better than the average king did 100 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, with very little
and
room
actually,
to equivocate there.
The average American lives better than a wealthy American lived 50 years ago.
Right, or even 30 years ago.
So we are getting better. Now, the rest of the world is a little different story, and that's another story, and I want to get into that. But the telephone number is in here, by the way, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And that's presuming that today is Saturday, August 8th,
yes,
2015.
The jobs report came out and it immediately caused the market to sink. Because
it's August.
Because it's August.
Right.
And any news causes the market to drop.
We employed a lot of people. We've hired many millions of people in the last 12 months, and unemployment stayed at 5.3%, so the market went down.
Right. Part of the reason why the market went down is because the Federal Reserve is almost positively going to raise short-term interest rates next month, because they said they were waiting to make sure that our employment stayed strong. Well, it did stay strong, and not only that, it was stronger than we expected it to be. So expect the short-term interest rate to go up. And now there are people that are saying this Fed-driven boom in the economy is, and I have to say, whoa, wait a minute. The Fed has, in essence, been contributing to deflation during this time period, because it's made it possible for banks to make a profit without giving loans. The next step, when it raises interest rates on its own short-term, it's going to make banks look at giving loans to other people as being a profitable event again, which that's going to be where the boom hits.
Do you know we have some brilliant clients?
I do know that. I don't know what the context of what
they're getting more brilliant as time goes by. We had one that rolled over a 401k recently during this market downturn, or he's been in the process of rolling over a 401k. And he said, please, when you get on the radio, do not talk up the market. We want you to have more negative stuff to say
right.
so that the market will stay down.
Right.
I thought, man, he wants the market down until he gets invested. Well, let me tell you how much the market is down. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was down 1.79% for the week. Year to date, it's down 2.52%. We are in the eighth month, almost halfway through, of this year, and the Dow is down 2.5% for the year. However, had you invested a year ago, you ready for this? You would have seen a gain of 4.95% over the last year in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Ooh. And if it drops much more, that'll go away too. And that is good. And you're going to think that's a little crazy. Now, it's not quite as bad in the S&P 500. Year to date, it's only down about 1%. It was only down 1.25% for the week. And it's actually up 7.56% for the one-year period. And that stinks if you're looking at the short term. You know, I've said we've been a long time without a correction.
Right.
This is the
kind
correction.
Of the equivalent, yeah.
No, this is, it's a slow, it's just like the recovery.
Yeah, it's kind of a...
Very slow and very wimpy.
This is a tepid correction for
yes.
a tepid recovery.
It's all the adjustments are in and everything, and it looks like the United States economy grew at 2.3%. In the second quarter, it actually grew just a little bit in the first quarter.
We have a really weird thing that happened.
Oh, that's about on an annualized basis, by the way.
Our exports are down 3.6% over a year ago,
mm-hmm.
and our imports are down 2.3% over a year ago.
Oh,
so
we're doom.
Not giving as many things to the rest of the world. Well, that makes sense because it's more expensive.
But we're not importing as many things.
But we're not importing or... We are importing just as much, but the value of it is less because we're importing using dollars.
Oh.
We buy from overseas with a strong dollar. It means that when we bring it in, it's valued in dollars, and it looks like our imports are down. The reality is that we have purchased a lot more stuff from overseas, but the dollar is buying more than it used to.
Now let me throw something else in there. I would not be terribly surprised to see a dip a little later on in the year. Typically, these things come in towards the end. They start towards the end of August, and they go into September, October.
Sometimes, if they're a big dip, they're in October. But if we don't have a big dip, we generally have a big upturn in October.
Well, either way, on the other side of October, of course, I don't know that we're going to get a dip in the next few months. There's certainly no. If I knew, I couldn't. You couldn't afford to listen to
right.
me. And I certainly wouldn't tell you about it. That'd be outsider trading or something.
Yeah.
The point I want to make is, and I've been saying this for several years, and I'm continuing to say this, 2016 is going to be the year the economy starts hitting on all cylinders, and barring some terribly unexpected and large-scale event. We're going to see, I think, a significant uptick in the economy next year. Now, those of you who are hardcore Tea Partyists who would prefer to have Donald Trump as president, you're not going to like that because history tells us a couple of things about what happens when in the last year of an administration, whether it's Republican or Democrat, we tend as a country to elect a president from the same party that's in office. And I can't find any exceptions to that one. For example, George H.W. Bush was not the most dynamic leader in the history of the world. One of the nicest people.
Great guy.
One of the great.
Good leader.
A genuine good guy. But
thinks
as a
way in advance.
As a leader, a dynamic leader of the country following Ronald Reagan.
He was a good vice president.
He was a good vice president. He's probably a pretty good director of the CIA. I don't know what else he did well, but.
He was the great naval pilot.
Well, I don't know. Trump wouldn't have liked him because he got shot down.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, the point is that there's a right now, barring some huge event, particularly with Donald Trump in the lead, the probabilities are our next president will be Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Yeah, yeah.
And you may not like that, and it may rub all of your feathers the wrong way, presuming you have feathers to be rubbed the wrong way.
If you have feathers, you should probably check on your medication.
That's right.
Probably not what you're intending it
to do. But this is the good news. If we get a Democratic, from the Democrat Party, president, history tells us the market is going to do really, really well over the next 4 years.
Yeah.
And everything else is set up for the market to do really, really well over the next 4 years.
And I said last week that I would much prefer to have cross-party leadership.
Well,
so that we have, if we have Republicans in the House and Senate, then we need to have a Democrat in the White House and vice versa.
Just from an economics, I would like to see the market do better. I would like to see our clients have more money. That's how we get paid. Man, right now, this downturn in the market sure looks like a good time to invest.
It sure does. Because when we look around...
It's not investment advice. I'm just simply saying...
We just had a group of earnings for this last quarter come out that have just been truly amazingly good. I mean, vast majority of the earnings coming in have been way above expectations. And the market's down. We have housing starts up. We have momentum in money. People are buying things again. We have good savings. We have our credit card debt at a pretty amazingly low rate. We have all these things happening, and people are afraid of the stock market. So if you recognize that the long-term price of the stock market has something to do with the strength of the economy, and we can see that the strength of the economy is not only getting better, but starting to get better faster, that says something about this downturn. It's a downturn for people that aren't paying attention, that are scared because they haven't looked around very much. Now, that's not saying that if you have a bad stock, you shouldn't get out of the stock. But if you're well-diversified, the American economy looks really good right now.
Jeremy Grantham, the permabear, says the markets are boring right now, and even he doesn't see bubbles going on. I mean, the most positive he gets is, well, bonds are terribly overpriced, but they're not a bubble. How about stocks? Well, stocks are terribly overpriced, but they're not really in a bubble.
Well, that's his opinion, that everything is overpriced but not a bubble. When he says that, it means that they're really underpriced.
And it's
as far as stocks goes.
I thought that was a pretty fascinating. By the way, there's some other interesting things going on in the world. Ukraine is teetering on the edge of becoming Greece.
For some reason, their economic growth has been slowed recently.
Yes,
I wonder why that is.
They have announced that they don't have the money to meet their next bond obligation, and they and the IMF and the usual suspects are huddling together to try to figure out how to. And they've simply said, we have more. And then they've also announced, by the way, they have more debt than they can pay.
Uh-huh.
Puerto Rico
said something very similar.
Now, Puerto Rico, I read a very fascinating article in the Financial Times this morning about Puerto Rico. And again, I like the perspective from the Financial Times because it makes actually a great deal of sense.
Does it discuss the tax changes 10 years
ago?
Well,
no. What it discusses is the fact that Secretary Liu said there is no plan to bail out Puerto Rico. And he says, oh, yeah, there is.
Right.
And what's happening is, he said, this is what he suspects will happen. There'll be a special commission appointed or arranged by Congress or something to go in and basically, because the United States has basically colonial authority.
Right.
That's what he referred to it, over Puerto Rico. It's basically a colony. We call it a commonwealth, but it's a colony.
It's like the District of Columbia in many ways. So they can pass their own laws, but we can say, no, we don't like those laws. Don't follow them.
The District of Columbia was the example he was using. You remember the federal government, District of Columbia went bankrupt. Only there was no way it could go bankrupt, so the Congress appointed a special committee to go in and take over and run the District of Columbia. And when they did, they basically said, if you were stupid enough to buy a bond, a other than general obligation bond, from the District of Columbia, then you deserve to lose some money.
Yeah.
So you're going to lose some money. And he said, the columnist said, take a look at how the Puerto Rican crisis, not the, the District of Columbia crisis was handled, and then turn around and look to say, if you want to do capital investment today or over the last couple of years, the best single entity in the United States where you could have invested was the District of Columbia. Apparently, most of the drug dealers and nefarious folks packed up and left or something. And what happened is the government, the federal government, has gradually turned some degree of autonomy back to the District of Columbia. But he said, there's your model. And he said, you will see everybody is kicking it down the road till after the 2016 elections.
Right.
After the 2016 elections, he said, you will see the United States do what the European Union is totally incapable of doing, which is move in decisively, take over, effectively take over the finances of the...
Decisively?
Yes.
Okay. You said move in decisively.
Move,
and I heard
move decisively.
Indecisively.
Move, move decisively into
okay, there we go.
The Puerto Rican finances, and without allowing them to declare bankruptcy, set up some kind of special commission that says, hey, all you guys who have something other than general obligation of bonds, too bad, so sad, you're taking a haircut. At which point the hedge funds will shriek in agony.
And say, what? No!
We bought up these things thinking we could force payment or else maybe take a piece of the island or something. And when it's all said and done, the debts will be reduced. The general obligation bonds, the ones that they really do promise to pay with full faith and credit, will be paid. The United States government will, in fact, infuse some money into Puerto Rico to reinvigorate things, and everybody will pat each other on the back. And he said this will all occur in 2017 as soon as the elections are over,
right,
no matter who gets elected.
Just to give some background onto what got Puerto Rico into this issue, about 10 years ago, they let a law lapse, a Puerto Rican law, that was giving the same kind of benefits that Texas does when a big company wants to come to Texas. There's a strategic fund that Texas uses and says, we will give you money and we will give you...
Strategery fund.
Yes. And when you show up, we're going to give you tax breaks and you will... But you have an obligation to hire a certain number of people and pay them a certain average rate. Well, Puerto Rico had something like that, and it worked really, really well. And then they let it go because they realized, you know, they've got plenty of employment. They didn't need that anymore. And over the last 10 years, their educated workforce has left because the corporations aren't hiring there anymore. So the educated workforce has come up to the rest of the United States, which has left an uneducated workforce with no great employment opportunities. So their unemployment level has been rising. It's lowered the amount that they can bring in as tax revenue. And they've been getting bonds thinking, oh, we'll just go back to what we were, but they haven't reinstated that law.
Well, you know, we're doing this in Texas too. We're trying to undo a law that allows the governor.
Right.
I don't know if they actually have physically done it yet.
I hope that they don't do it.
Allows the governor basically to pay a corporation through tax breaks and incentives.
It's this is a great analogy. I used it the other day. If someone has schizophrenia or psychosis and they're taking medication, you don't tell them to stop taking the medication when they feel good.
Some people would, because they say, well, you know, taking lithium can't be good for you.
Right. So they stop taking it and they have a massive relapse. Well, mm-hmm. In this case, the fund that we use to bring businesses to Texas is a fund that has been vastly successful. And this is a segue. When the Puerto Rican law was let to lapse, it led to collapse. And now they're much more dependent on businesses coming in than Texas is. But Texas got that way by bringing a lot of businesses here. And this leads me to the Import-Export Bank.
Well, no, but let me take you back to the import. Before you leave Puerto Rico.
Okay.
That fund was financed by bonds.
Yes.
And they're called Public Finance Corporation Bonds. And they're issued by the Government Development Bank of Puerto Rico, okay?
Right.
That's what they just defaulted on.
Right. They defaulted on it, because they stopped doing it because they thought they had lots of money coming in from the corporations that were already there, enough to pay for everything, and then they spent the rest of the money on other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, look,
mostly,
we've got...
Mostly pensions, by the
right,
way.
We have this huge pot of money that we're spending on bringing new businesses here. Who needs that? We've got plenty of new businesses.
They killed the goose that laid the golden
egg. Right, and so they turned and they spent the money in the bucket, and they didn't have any more money to put in the bucket.
And at the national level, we're doing the same thing with the Import-Export Bank.
That's exactly correct.
And folks, if you have any influence with the congressmen that we have or the senators, tell them you want the Import-Export Bank put back in business. One of the biggest employers in the United States, one of the biggest contributors to our GDP, is a company called Boeing. And Boeing has said very clearly, no Import-Export Bank. We're going to start moving significant operations outside the United States.
Because we're going to lose all our business to Airbus.
Yeah, they can't compete with Airbus, where Canada, for example, will provide the equivalent of Import-Export Bank to Boeing. Now, the labor costs in Canada are higher. It's harder to do business in Canada. But Boeing at least can get their products financed when they go to sell them to somebody.
This one of the things that I have admired about Rick Perry, and there's not a lot of things that I've admired about
Rick Perry. I'm waiting with bated breath here.
Was his management of the fund to bring companies to the United States. It was under appointment to the Secretary of State of Texas. But that ability to use that fund appropriately has led us through a nasty disaster. Now, there's other situations that were applied to that, and that we had a dot-com bubble burst and mess up a lot of our real estate levels. We were already down when the rest of the country was way up, so we didn't have a lot of distance to fall, so we recovered faster. We also had new business growth during the whole downturn because we used that fund to bring companies from Detroit and from California and from all over the country to Texas to start bigger businesses here. If we stop doing the thing that got us here, we shouldn't expect to stay here. And the Import-Export Bank is part of the strength of American imports and exports. And when we look a year back and see that our imports and our exports are down, we are not an island. We helped establish the global trade that exists. And if we start pulling away from it, that's not going to lead to good things. That's happened in history with a lot of different places. And when you start stepping back from the rest of the world, from making a profit, from dealing in trade with the rest of the world, that starts the decline of a great power. We don't want to do that. So this is an economic perspective. The Import-Export Bank is economically vital to the health of the United States.
Yeah, I sincerely hope
it's profitable. So why have it shut down?
It's just a matter of principle because the rank and file of the Tea Party don't like it.
They don't like it because there's a budget in the congressional area that looks like it's going to foreign aid when the reality is that budget gets paid back with extra money.
Well, I don't know that the Import-Export Bank has a budget line item.
It does.
It does?
Yeah, because in order to get a loan, for instance, if Thailand wants to buy Boeing airplanes, they go to the Import-Export Bank.
Right,
but the Import-Export Bank doesn't have a big cash bucket. It turns to Congress and its line items and gets that money and makes the loan and then gives the money back with profit to the Congress because they're not supposed to hold the money.
Well, I sincerely hope that the right wing that is driving the blocking of the Export-Import Bank renewal wakes up and suddenly realizes that this is A, good free enterprise, and B, good for the country, and C, makes money. If they don't, we're going to hurt ourselves.
Yeah.
But, we'll survive it either way. But I just, unfortunately, there's an awful lot of that goes on, which is why Donald Trump is so popular.
Right. There is some room right now for private enterprise to step in. If the big banks get together and form their own Export-Import Bank.
I don't know that they can even do that.
It's difficult. That's the reason why the government is involved in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and it's the reason why the Export-Import Bank exists, is because it requires almost a monopoly to make those kinds of decisions, and we don't allow our corporations to be monopolies.
And the issue is that if nobody else had an import-export bank, we would need to have one.
But everybody else does because they designed it on ours.
And the point is the fact that we don't have one because those banks could get together and the risk involved meant that they would have to charge a higher interest rate to finance it, which meant that let's just say China wanted to buy a bunch of airplanes or
lawnmowers.
Somebody,
doesn't matter what it is.
Somebody wanted to buy a bunch of stuff from a major manufacturer in the United States, and they have a choice between, well, in this case, airplanes, between Airbus, which is financed by Germany and France and gives virtually zero interest rate loans on buying the Airbus, versus Boeing, who has a competitive product, and it could be even a better product. But the point is that if those banks stepped in, they're not going to do it on a zero interest base loan basis. They're going to charge an interest rate because they need to make a profit. Whereas Boeing pays a lot of taxes to the United States government. So it's obviously in the interest of the United States government that Boeing keep employing people
and make the money here.
Having subcontractors that pay taxes,
right,
and have employees that pay taxes.
Their answer to this at Boeing is to set up a manufacturing facility in Canada or in France. We don't want to lose that business.
I don't know that France is an option for them. But
maybe anyway. In French Canada.
Okay, so, but you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we do need to play some commercials so we can keep KTEM on the air and Town Square Media still smiling and whatever else they do. So you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and presuming that today's Saturday, August 8th, 2015, you're welcome to give us a call on the other side of these commercials at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
We'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And presuming today is August 8, 2015, then you can give us a call at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
So
We got one more thing here. Another piece of nerdy information.
Okay.
In June, personal income rose 0.4%. That's not annualized. That's for the month. So if you do the math on that, you'll see it's almost a 5% increase year over year. That is pretty amazing. That's 3.5% up from the year before, but it's increasing its rate. We've been talking a lot last hour and this hour about pay changes, that there are a whole series of industries where women getting out of college are getting paid more than men. One of those, or a whole chunk of those industries, are in engineering. The typical statement, you know, about concentration of wealth and the one percenters and so on, I wanted to address that clearly as well, because this is something I've had some good conversations over the last week with people that are liberals, and they're really, really upset about the one percenters. About these people, this concentration of wealth that's happening. And it's true, it is happening. And they're really upset because of company lobbying Congress type issues, where the companies get involved and they're giving Congress an earful of stuff to try to keep new innovation from happening. And I have to tell people that they need to open up their history books. They need to, or in the case of a lot of these people, open up their history Wikipedias. Because if you go back through the cycle, what we'll find is that a new technology tends to last about three generations. A new technology starts, the startup of that new technology is very liberal. And if you want to, if you question that, look at Google, look at Apple, but go back and look at Ford when it was started as well. Go back and look at the railroad companies when they were started. They were startups. They didn't want to get involved with congressional anything. But they realized after a certain period of time that Congress was going to try to regulate their industry. So just like what Apple and Google have done in the last few years, they realized that they actually have to go and send people to D.C. to make sure that their technology is not regulated out of existence. So it starts with this really good concept of we're just going to go and tell Congress you're doing the wrong thing here or they're doing the right thing here when it comes to our business. We're the experts because we started it and so on. And it leads three generations or on the third generation to what happened with the car industry, of a bloated industry that has been successful on the merits of actually lobbying too much in Congress and expecting there not to be any competition. And what I would say to the liberals that talk about the one percenters is that we go through this right before a new technology completely disrupts the people in that 1% group. The new technology comes along, whether it's Google and Apple and Amazon and all of them stepping up and pushing out General Motors and Ford and the other big companies. And every time that happens, it brings a stronger version of the American dream. What Donald Trump keeps saying is, I want to make America better. That's great. I think it's great that we should make America better, but it's already happening. Every time we have a big downturn in the economy, we have startups that pop up out of it that prove again that poor people can become rich people in the United States.
It's actually going on, and there was a tremor from it this week.
Mm-hmm.
Media outlets, networks, chains, Murdoch's empire, and the rest of them.
Right.
Took some big stock hits this last week because for the first time, ESPN is seeing decline in subscriptions, decline in revenue.
You don't have to watch ESPN to get your sports
right.
news
and,
anymore.
And what is happening, and the official purveyors of this stuff are saying, no, this is not going to happen. It's just a minor little blip. But in fact, what is happening is people across the country are disconnecting their cables.
Right.
And just as cable swamped and all of the things associated with cable, ESPN, all the CNN, Fox, all of the channels that dump information out so that you passively, if you're watching that channel, you passively receive the information when they decide to dump it on the cable, universally declined this week because universally as they're reporting their revenues, as they're reporting what's going on, they're finding collapse beginning now, as people do like we have done in our household. We've been without a cable or television hookup for quite a while. If we want to see a given something, I'll probably read about it or see it somewhere on the net. And
HBO has just moved to Amazon Prime.
So I'll go to Amazon Prime. I'll go to Netflix. I'll go to YouTube.
Right.
Amazingly enough, I just watched a full-length movie on YouTube.
So we're talking about a new industry here that started up and that's completely disrupting the. If you think about when the cable companies first got started.
And they disrupted the broadcast.
Right. The cable companies came along. They were the startups. They didn't have almost any input into the congressional process. They were scrapping and fighting as much as they could. And over time, they turned into these massive megalithic corporations that had congressional monopolies on different areas. And because they, over time, lobbied. And they become top-heavy, and a new technology will come along and knock them over. It happened to the music industry. It's basically any industry that we look at and we say that will never change was once a startup industry. And at that point, it didn't have a congressional lobbying arm. And now it probably does. And the longer it stays like that, the more unstable they are for the next big push by a startup. And I want people to recognize that the one percenters, we do have laws that keep money from transferring from generation to generation without paying a big haircut to the government.
I want to, on a completely different subject, I want to say, I told you so.
You said it very well.
We have been talking about the fact that we're uncomfortable with PIMCO. for years.
Then we said their pricing of alternatives investments,
yeah,
and what they say the price is isn't probably what the price is.
It just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to us, because you could add up the numbers and they came up to more than 100 when you looked at all the percentages. And they all claim we're not leveraging. We're investing like 130% of the money that's invested with us, but we're not borrowing any money to do it.
How do they do that?
And
the SEC's involved.
The SEC has now sent them a Wells notice,
which is just a notice that there's an investigation underway.
Well, it's a notice that we're going to sue you. Can you tell us any reason why we shouldn't sue you for securities fraud?
Right.
And that's
Bill Gross is over at Janus now, and he's kind of the one that led them through it. So he should be part of this. He's not part of the Wells notice yet, but he will be.
And there's some indication some of the insiders there are working with the SEC. Anyway, we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, quick question. You know, if you look at the posted unemployment numbers of 5.5%, y'all quoted that yourselves, it's totally unrealistic if you look at our total workforce and percentages of the workforce that aren't even counted in those unemployment figures.
I don't know. I've looked at the numbers very carefully. Now, the what's called the U6, which is all the people that are that could be employed, that might be employed, then aren't fully employed, and everything else. Basically, the worst case number, U6, is also reported. It's like it's also down, and it's come down the same way. The bottom line to it is, there's only 5.3% of the people in the United States, when they are surveyed, say, "I am actively looking for work right now and don't have a job." And that's, you know, you can say, well, that's not a good way to measure it. You ought to measure the people who are working but looking for another job. Well, that's in the U6. But the point is that if you're going to measure unemployment in the United States, it's probably a pretty good idea to measure it the same way we measured it 50 years ago.
Right.
And the way we measured it 50 years ago is people got asked, are you currently unemployed? And B, in the last week, have you looked for a job? And are you actively looking for a job, and are you unemployed? And to change the rules at this point would mean that we couldn't measure it against where we've been in the past. And I think it's a pretty good system. I mean, I know people who make a pretty good living. They may have three jobs. They have three part-time jobs, and they make a pretty good living. And you can't call them unemployed.
Yeah, where we are in the U6 unemployment is at 10.5%.
Okay.
And U6 is basically everybody that could be employed or has been employed in the past but aren't employed now. And there's a strangeness to that number because the baby boomers are retiring right now, and they're causing a strange add to that.
Right.
But I've mentioned this site before. It's worth looking at. If you want to look at the numbers in more detail than most other people, go to macrotrends.net. They have a lot of data. If you just look at the employment data, they will show you the U5, the official, and the U6. And what you see is that they move in concert, that the U6 at its top, at its peak unemployment, was back in October of 2009, and it was at 17.4%. That's not good. That's really bad.
Mm-hmm.
The official rate was at 10%. So there was a 7% difference between the U6 and the official. And now we've got a U6 at 10.5,
and
the official at 5. So we've got a 5% differential.
But there's a double. It basically doubles.
My point relative to this is our economy is definitely improving, getting better than it was in the recession. But it's not near as healthy as the numbers indicate.
I disagree with you.
It depends on how you look at the numbers. If somebody was quoting the official unemployment report at the peak, we had an official unemployment of 10, just right around 10. Well, that's not a good representation, but that's one that people use a lot. So when they can look at the 10 and we can say that's a real number.
There have been a couple of times when we've had higher employment numbers as a percentage. One was in 2007, obviously, and the other one is at the end of 1999, beginning of 2000. Those were, very frankly, they were anomalies. They were situations where people were being hired who couldn't do the job because they needed somebody so desperately. And that's a bad sign, by the way. But the economy and the people in the economy are doing actually quite well. I don't know. You're showing me something, but I can't read the numbers.
The top one is the U6. The next one's U5. Yeah. And then the official.
The issue that's in the economy right now, when you say the economy is not doing that well, why is it that you're saying that?
The reason I say that is that our labor participation percentages are at historic lows right now.
Sure, because the baby boomers are retiring.
Baby boomers, that's a big one. Baby boomers are retiring, and there's another baby boom happening.
And
if you look at the demographics, people are having babies at a very high rate right now, mm-hmm. at the same time that the baby boomers are retiring.
And that's the other side of it. A, baby boomers are retiring. B, a lot of women have decided to not go back to work after the 2009 collapse. They've decided to have babies instead. Now, neither of those are bad. Neither of those indicate a bad economy. There are
a demographic shift.
But it doesn't mean the economy is not doing as well, because when we look at the output of the economy, the total goods and services being sold to somebody and that they're paying for,
that's up.
That's way up. The economy is doing great. Now, I will say that there are going to be pockets in a rapid technologically changing economy.
You're going to have elements
in the economy that were highly skilled and highly paid in the previous technological universe. But when the technology changes, and again,
just go to Detroit for a moment.
Give me a classic is a guy who's just absolutely hyper-adept at screwing on fenders, at bolting on fenders on GM automobiles or something like that.
Been doing it for 37 years.
The power tools with the, you know, whatever kind of impact wrenches it used to tie those things. I mean, he was really, really good. He was the equivalent in the last economic boom.
John Henry was a steel driving man.
Yeah, but this guy who was out working on the assembly line in Detroit was the equivalent of the coder, that's what they're called, who's sitting somewhere in a cubicle hammering code into a computer right now, who also has a pretty secure job because they can't find it. They're basically, I don't know if you know this, in our economy, there are people being recruited off the street who don't know what a coding language is, taken and putting through coding. The companies are paying to put them through coding boot camp, which only a certain percentage of them survive. And once they pay them to go through the education process, and then the companies hire them out of the boot camp because they don't have enough coders. And by the way, that will be taken over by computers too in the near future as the computers do the coding.
Yeah, this transition happens. We have these big pockets of unemployment that happen as we shift from one technology to the other. It's almost what I was talking about just a few moments ago. That shift causes a lot of people that were employed at a place that they thought was going to be forever to go, I've got to completely relearn everything that I'm doing. And
actually, I would posit one other thing, too. If you look at our social welfare benefits program, they have gotten so generous that a person can almost refuse to join the job force and survive rather well.
I completely disagree with you on that point. I know people who are on the social welfare program who would do almost anything to get off the social welfare program because they can't own anything and they have a very, very minimal subsistence. The people I have been able to find who are actually on the social welfare program, by and large, are disabled people who are still living with their parents.
Now, there are exceptions. There are exceptions, and those are the ones that we can look at and say that's disgusting. Mm-hmm. There are people that are taking advantage of the system. And if you see people like that, you should report them. And I hear people talking about somebody in line at the grocery store using a Lone Star card when their kids all have $100 tennis shoes. Take a picture. Report it, because that may be fraud. But don't think that that's what's happening everywhere just because...
No, definitely not. Those that are in need, I have no problem with helping them, none whatsoever.
But, you know, I've looked at the social welfare. Have you ever sat down? Okay, we're out of time, obviously.
We missed it. Sorry, thanks for the call. Best
talk in America. Okay, goodbye.
News Radio 1400 KTEN. The following is a paid advertisement by Purity Products. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to...